listening, and this is Dr. Z with the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z program right here on this wonderful radio station, Progressive Radio Network. And you could always get information about our up-and-coming events and things that we're doing at naturalnurse.com and drznaturally.com. And we're excited to talk about a very timely subject, Lyme disease. And with us is Dr. Christine Horner. And, of course, she's nationally known as a surgeon and has done a lot of work to fight breast cancer and with breast reconstructive surgery. And her campaign involves several meetings with President Clinton and other political figures. But we're not going to be talking about that today. We're actually going to be talking about Lyme disease and mosquito-borne diseases, which are on the rise. And I share with Dr. Horner a very good interest in that as one of the leaders in the naturopathic food field and founders of the University of Bridgeport College of Naturopathic Medicine, the first naturopathic school on the East Coast. We see lots of Lyme disease patients, chronic Lyme disease patients, so I'm sure we'll kick around some great ideas and misconceptions and things about Lyme disease and what you and your family should know to stay healthy this summer. Dr. Horner, welcome.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be back on with you.
Yeah, great to have you. So, you know, it's getting nice outside and people are spending more time outside, but they're really afraid because the CDC has said that Lyme disease is on the rise. So let's talk a little bit about Lyme disease and your perspective. Tell us a little bit about what causes Lyme disease and a little bit about how it's transmitted.
Sure. So most people have heard of Lyme disease now. And actually, it wasn't really recognized until fairly late, I think. So like in the 1970s, these mothers in Lyme, Connecticut, so that's where the name came from, they noticed that there was a lot of kids that seemed to be coming down with what looked like rheumatoid arthritis. They weren't really sure what it was. And then in the 1980s is when a researcher named Dr. Bergdorfer found that this disease was actually caused by ticks that carry a certain bacteria and is considered a spirochete, which just means that it's a type of bacteria that looks like it's in the spiral. And so they actually named it in honor of him. So it's called Borrelia burgdorferi. And so basically what happens is that these ticks, and there's only one type of tick that actually carries Lyme disease. It's called a black-legged tick or a deer tick. And it gets its name deer tick because actually deers and some other rodents will carry Lyme disease. And when the ticks attach onto the deer, they get it from the deer. And then what happens is that if you are exposed to, you know, this tick, and it's endemic in about 14 different states, and mostly it's in the Northeast. There's also an incidence that's fairly significant in Minnesota and Wisconsin, and then they found it in Northern California. So it's actually kind of spreading. The ticks are living longer, and their habitat is kind of spreading. But basically, if you're particularly in the Northeast and you go out and you're in, like, tall grasses is where they like to be, or in the woods and so forth, you can have one of these ticks that would attach onto you, and then they inject the bacteria into you. And so it's a very, very complex disease. Lyme is, and there's so many things that really make it difficult. So initially what happens is you have a reaction to the infection, basically, from the Borrelia burgdorferi, and the symptoms are kind of like having the flu. So you can have muscle aches and pains and fevers and, you know, lots of fatigue and that kind of thing. And unless you have a really high index of suspicion, you would know. I mean, you would just think, oh, I've got the flu, and then it seems like it goes away, and then it comes back with a vengeance. It can, you know, a few weeks later where it's a completely different disease at that point in time. So it goes from, like, in the acute phase, it's caused by the bacteria, and actually antibiotics are very effective at getting rid of it in the first 30 days. after that, it goes into something called chronic Lyme disease. And this is another just wildly bizarre kind of disease that's actually doesn't have anything to do with the bacteria at that point in time, and antibiotics don't work. It's considered a multi-system inflammatory disease. So there's actually kind of a weird thing that happens with your immune system that then kicks off this huge amount of inflammation in your body. And so it can mimic 300 different diseases is what the estimate is. And, you know, it can show up like you think you have arthritis, or you can actually get inflammation in your heart that can cause heart palpitations. You can get inflammation in your brain that can cause all sorts of psychiatric problems and memory loss, and people have even ended up in mental institutions with it. So it's really difficult to diagnose. And then the fortunate thing is that there are effective treatments, you know, and preventative things that you can do that we can talk about next.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. One of my students, Dr. Pat Bartlett, she did her thesis on Lyme disease. It was really interesting that, you know, way back in the 1700s, some of the colonists reported what they ended up calling Montauk Knee, you know, from Montauk, New York, Long Island. And so, you know, and they were hypothesizing that maybe that was, you know, maybe Lyme disease has been with us a long time. We just never knew the cause of these kinds of things. Although there are many tick-borne illnesses, rickettsial illnesses, and then there's the co-infections too that come along with a tick bite. And I know some patients came in with their lab reports where the doctor, you know, ran a nice lab report online, but forgot some of the co-infections. What are some of the co-infections that come along with a tick bite like that?
Well, you're absolutely correct on that. So, I mean, this is kind of a scary topic to talk about, you know, for people, because it just seems like, holy cow, you can get so incredibly sick, you know, from these. And it's true that it's not like these ticks would just exclusively have Lyme disease. You know, they can actually have all sorts of different kinds of other, you know, diseases and bacteria and viruses and, you know, all sorts of stuff that can get injected at the same time. So it's like, well, then you can have multiple, you know, issues going on at one time because of the, you know, various different other.
Like one of my colleagues was hospitalized for Babesia last year, and which is practically like having malaria, the same symptomology of malaria. I mean, he had intermittent fevers and just terrible headaches and crazy stuff. So, you can be injected if you're bit. There's a lot of things that can happen, too.
Yeah, that's for sure. So the important thing is, I mean, my purpose is not to scare people, but actually to let them know there's things that you can do that are preventative that can be very effective. And then if you get, you know, into the situation of chronic Lyme, there's some effective ways that can help you to get well, you know, too.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're going to be sentenced to a, you know, horrible life, super symptomatic. Yeah.
No, I think it's important to catch it, like you said before. So I know in some of the material that was sent, I think, by your publicist beforehand, they looked at the percentage of people that get a rash for, and when you, you know, I've had Lyme three times, you know. So living out in the country in Connecticut here, that's where my practice is. And so, you know, when I got bit, and we'll talk a little bit about people's own immune response, you know, I'm a pretty healthy person. When I get a cold, I usually get a fever and a very vigorous immune response, even with a cold. It shows that my immune system is working. The intelligence of my body is working. But there's many people when they get an infectious disease that don't even know that they have it. They have hardly any immune response, and then there's no warning, and the disease travels very deeply into the body and can become of a chronic nature. So tell us a little bit about your immune system and what you've seen in your patients for why people would go chronic with Lyme versus catch it early.
Sure. So, you know, our immune system is composed of all these, you know, different cells and chemical messengers and so forth. And it's really the thing that helps to, you know, keep us healthy. It will go out there and look for foreign invaders from bacteria, viruses, you know, even cancer cells. And if your immune system is nice and healthy, then it will eliminate those things. If it's not, then it won't. So we find that one of the keys to excellent health is to keeping your immune system really strong. And that's really a holistic approach, because there's so many dimensions to our lives that influence our health and our immune system. So, of course, eating a diet that's high in plants, organically grown plants, so they don't have the pesticides on them, is something super supportive for your immune system. Eating junk foods and, you know, processed foods and sugar, just sugar absolutely kills your immune system off. They actually have seen studies where they measured the number and function of the immune cells after consuming a high sugary meal, and they found that it could drop the function by 90% for up to 5 hours afterwards. So, you know, sugar is a perfect way to kill off your immune system. And of course, you know, all the other healthy diet and lifestyle things that we know of, as far as getting, you know, proper sleep and sleeping at the, you know, right time. Stress is something that, you know, plays a huge role in the effectiveness of your immune system. When you're stressed out, it just, you know, your immune system just tanks. And so, again, it's kind of this holistic approach of keeping your immune system healthy. And they do find that people who have a really healthy immune system, that they generally just have really mild symptoms if they get, you know, injected with a Borrelia bacteria, and that they don't get chronic Lyme disease if your immune system is really healthy. So this is another, you know, reason to keep yourself as healthy as you possibly can. There are some nutritional supplements that can really be of benefit too. And there's in particular, there's a mushroom formula out of Japan called AHCC. And ACC has been around for decades. They recognize it in Japan as being the most effective formula for helping to keep the immune system nice and healthy. And they, in fact, they even prescribe it in the hospitals in Japan, particularly for cancer patients. And the survival statistics are so much better. So they did a pilot study recently. And what they did was to give AHCC to people who had the initial Lyme disease, which, again, this is a reaction to the bacteria if it's caught in the first 30 days, which there's actually no blood tests that you can do that are going to be accurate in the first 30 days. So it's really a rough thing. But if you're treated with, you know, antibiotics, it'll eradicate it. And then they, so they gave it to the people that had the acute Lyme disease. And then they also gave it to people with a chronic Lyme, which, as I described previously, is a completely different kind of disease that is, multi-system inflammatory disease. And it seems like the inflammation is tied to the function of the immune system. So when the immune system is nice and healthy, there's a decrease in inflammation. And, you know, if the immune system isn't healthy, then, you know, it really kicks up the inflammation. So anyway, they gave the AHCC to people that had both the acute Lyme and the chronic Lyme for 8 weeks. And at the end of 8 weeks, they, analyzed them, and they found that there was a dramatic improvement in symptoms in everybody, whether it was acute Lyme or chronic Lyme. Now, they discovered that it also tremendously decreased inflammation. And then there's a blood test. You know, this is a thing where we're just really, it's a challenge in so many different ways, but there's no real accurate blood test that can help us to diagnose Lyme disease. There is an antigen that your body can form called a Lyme-specific antigen, and usually that is not something that shows up for about a month after you've been exposed to the bacteria, because it comes from an immune response. And even if you get the chronic Lyme, it may not show that it's positive. It's only, you know, like the sensitivity of it and so forth, it shows up maybe about 50, 60% of the time. Otherwise, somebody could have Lyme and they test negative for it. So, and there's other blood tests that they try too, but like none of them are super, you know, accurate. But they did have three people in this study who had positive for the Lyme-specific antigen. And then when they retested them after 8 weeks on AHCC, they found that their antigen went negative. So that's one thing that's extremely beneficial. And I actually discovered AHCC about, I say 5, 6 years ago or something like that. And I started taking it every day because I was so impressed with the research with it. And so for the first 4 years of taking it, I never had a cold or anything. It was just like miraculous. So I think it's a wonderful thing to take preventatively to keep your immune system nice and strong. And then also you can take it if you do, you know, develop the symptoms of Lyme disease. This, pilot study is showing us that it can be effective both in that early stage as well as the chronic stage. Vitamin D is another super important nutrient that we just keep finding more and more research on it that's showing that it's essential for proper health for every one of our cells. And if you're low in vitamin D, which it's estimated that about 80% of Americans are low in vitamin D, if you're low in it, then it increases your risk of all sorts of different kinds of diseases, from neurological things like multiple sclerosis and Parkinson's disease. It also increases your risk of certain cancers, particularly like breast cancer, colon cancers. And so vitamin D is also extremely important for a healthy immune system. So that's a simple thing that you can do just to make sure that your vitamin D levels are at an adequate amount and kind of in that therapeutic range. And the only way that you would know that is to get your levels checked. So you can either do that through your doctor's office, or you can actually order a kit on the internet on a website called NutrientPower.org. And NutrientPower.org is a 501c3 organization that is actually studying the levels of vitamin D as well as omega-3 fatty acids and analyzing what the relationship is to the incidence of various different diseases. But they have this kit that you can order. It comes to your house and it has instructions in it, but basically you're just pricking your finger and putting a little dot of blood on a piece of paper, sending it in, and then they'll let you know what your levels are. And then you can adjust how much you're taking based on what your levels are. And the interesting thing about vitamin D as well as omega-3 fatty acids is that everybody kind of metabolizes them differently. And so you don't really know how much you need to take until you're, you know, looking to see what your, levels are. And at this point in time, most experts are saying everybody needs at least 2,000 international units of vitamin D3 a day. And sometimes people need a lot more than that, just depending on what their circumstances are.
Yeah, that's very true. And when people get this, when sometimes they get this chronic Lyme state, I've seen some people are actually have been cleared of the infection, but they still go on to get this inflammatory thing. It's like their B and
right.
T cells, get agitated and get fired up and get programmed to seek and destroy, like many autoimmune diseases. So it's kind of nice that you're mentioning some of these messenger molecules found in the mushroom concentrate that you talked about, and vitamin D3. I remember Dr. Jeff Land talking about vitamin D3. Said he used to say it's the emergency brake on many autoimmune diseases. So we have to look at it not only as an infectious disease, but that some people go into this autoimmune state and probably the spirochetes at that point, especially if they've been on a vigorous protocol, may not be around or may not be
right
in high enough amounts to cause an infection, but at the same time, people
right.
are still suffering.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. In fact, they found that treating people with antibiotics in a chronic phase doesn't work. And not only does it not work, but it causes more harm than good. Yeah. So it's truly a completely different disease. It's, you know, this multi-system inflammatory disease, which is caused by kind of a malfunction in the immune system that then sets off this tremendous inflammation, you know, all over the body. So just to kind of go backtrack just a little bit about some preventative things that you can do.
Right.
So, you know,
that's
if you're in one of these endemic areas, which, you know, you're ground zero in Connecticut, if you're going out and you know you're going to be in one of those areas, it's good to have, you just be completely covered, you know, long, and you want to wear like lighter colored fabrics, but long sleeves, long pants, tuck your pants into your socks, because the ticks like to crawl up. So it doesn't, it's an outfit ruiner, as I say, but it keeps the ticks from, you know, crawling up into your pant leg there. And, you know, if you've got long hair, pull it back. You could wear, you know, scarf kind of thing. And then they found that there's actually a number of essential oils that are extremely effective at repelling the ticks. In fact, they did studies where they compared the essential oils to DEET, which we know is a neurotoxin, and some questions about how the safety of that. But they found that it was much more effective than DEET. So there's a number of them that were tested, and you can actually make your own spray by using a bottle, putting witch hazel or apple cider vinegar. The ticks hate the smell of that. You can even put vodka in there. And then add some of the essential oils, so things like eucalyptus, lemongrass, citronella, tea tree oil, rosemary, geranium, you know, is another one that was found to be effective. So then what you want to do is spray your skin and your clothes before you go out. If you don't want to make your own essential oil potion, you can actually buy some of these things from the health food store. You'll find that. And interestingly, catnip oil, they've done studies showing with that.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they did studies with you know, looking at, again, comparing to DEET, and they found it was 10 times more effective than DEET as far as repelling mosquitoes and so forth, but also, you know, with the ticks. So, you know, those are great things that you can do. Then afterwards, you know, when you get done, wherever you're, where you're at, one of the most important things to do is to do a tick check, basically. So you're, it's helpful if you have somebody in the household too, because these things like to kind of hide behind your ears and wherever the skin kind of creases, you know, into your arms, the elbows, you know, kind of area. And they're real tiny is one of the problems too. So they, the stage in which the tick is most infective to human beings is in this very early phase called the nymph phase. And they're tiny, then they look like little poppy seeds, basically. So you can use a lint roller and kind of roll your clothes to see if you can pick any of them up that way, but then doing a tick check. If you find a tick, then what's recommended is that you use tweezers and you get real close, you know, right on top of the skin and grab the tick and then gently pull back. So all the kind of wild things I was told as a kid too, to burn them or, you know, twist them, that kind of thing. You're actually just supposed to, you know, pull it off and go straight back and then bring it to your healthcare provider so that the tick could be tested for Lyme. There's a kit you can get from Amazon. I found too that basically is a tick where you can put the tick into the envelope and send it in so they can test it. But anyway, so that way you would know, does it have Lyme disease or does it not? Now, another fact about this is that these ticks actually have to be attached for a while before they inject the bacteria. So it's not like you have to freak out if you find one and it's been just on for a couple hours. They usually can't infect you in that very short period of time. Now, there's some controversy about how long they need to be attached. If you go to the Centers for Disease Control website, the CDC, they say these ticks have to be attached from anywhere between 24 and 48 hours. And then there's other studies I read where maybe it's less than that. It could be 16 or something like that. So anyway, in that early phase, like I said, you don't have to freak out because it takes a while for them to, you know, get injected with it, you know, immediately.
Right. I like your idea with the catnip oil. That's good. There's a I teach with Ellen, the natural nurse, my co-host. We teach, you know, some of these kind of cool herbal fun shops, and we sometimes make our own catnip oil. And all you have to do is gather lots of catnip. Wait until it flowers, though, like just about when it flowers, because that's when the oil content is highest. And then you just get some coconut oil or olive oil, and you just infuse it, put the catnip in there, put it in like a blender, and just leave it on your car dashboard in the sun, like in a hot July day like it's been. And after about a week, it will draw lots of the oils from the plant. You could strain it out, and then you can use that possibly as a good anti-bug spray. Now, the other thing is, of course, with me, when I'm out, what I do is, if I can, I usually strip down and I head for the shower and do the tick check there. So where does the bug like to attach? Where does the tick like to attach on people?
Yeah, so I agree with you about the shower thing, because they say you should take a shower within 2 hours, you know, being out, so that you can check. Yeah, but so they like to go in places where you have creases or folds. So like in your groin, on the, you know, I call it the antecubital fossa, the other side of your elbow, you know, under your arm, behind your ears. Those are kind of some of their favorite places.
Yeah, and so if it is attached, what should one do? I mean, you mentioned kind of a tweezers, but should you really go to the doctor to have that handled, or should you yank it out yourself?
You can do it yourself. Yeah. Yeah. So you just take the tweezers and you put it close to the skin and then pull it out straight back. And again, it's a really good idea to get the tick analyzed to see if it has Lyme disease in it. So again, you can either bring that to your healthcare provider, or like I said, I found a kit on Amazon that has everything that you need, you know, to send the tick in.
Does it regurgitate?
Yeah.
Does the tick regurgitate when you try to yank it out, and will that increase your likelihood of getting the illness or something? I've heard.
Well, I don't think so. I mean, it's just a real fast thing that you do. Just go handle it. Yeah. No, I've read nothing about that being a situation. Yeah.
Well, you don't want to squeeze it. And, you know, what I'm saying is, if people squeeze the body, could they? Because
you want to go super close to the skin. So you're kind of grabbing it on its head and, you know, and mouth parts and pulling straight back. Yeah.
Yeah, and then, well, it's time to take a break. We're about halfway to the half-hour mark, and so if you're just joining us, we're here with Dr. Christine Horner talking about Lyme disease and many of the summer things that we deal with when we're out and about hiking or just doing yard work. It could just be very casual. Like, I remember some of my patients, one of them was at a wedding at a golf course, right? And she was all dressed up and whatever, and that was, and just went, touched tall grass and ended up getting Lyme disease, because of course she couldn't shower and do a tick check. She had a wedding and whatnot, but she still got bit, and that was that was where we traced it back to the where she could have been bit, because she was actually from New York and didn't spend a lot of time outside. So yeah, it could be the strangest places that you get bit. So when we return, we'll talk more about that, and we'll move on to mosquitoes and maybe some other summer ailments, if you don't mind, Dr. Horner. We'll talk about other things, too, because you're quite knowledgeable in all these things. So we're going to play, hopefully, our natural medicine chest and return with more of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z on Progressive Radio Network. Stay with us, folks.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll explore the medicinal properties of the plants of the ephedra genera, focusing on the traditional Chinese ephedra, also known as mahuang.
Many species of the plant ephedra are used today in medicine throughout the world. The most medicinal of these are ephedra sinica, or Chinese mahuang, and ephedra nevadensis, also known as Mormon tea. Most of the research on ephedra has been performed on mahuang, whose stems and branches have been used as a traditional Chinese medicine for over 5,000 years in the treatment of asthma, hay fever, bronchitis, as well as the common cold.
Ephedra species are erect evergreen shrubs which grow in segmented bamboo-like joints reminiscent of straw ending in thin wisps. They typically are desert plants, preferring arid conditions on dry, rocky, and sandy slopes. The Chinese ephedra, Ma Huang, has earned an impressive reputation as a source of the alkaloid chemical called ephedrine. In the West, scientists became interested in the medicinal usage of Ma Huang after they isolated ephedrine and pseudoephedrine in 1923. Today, synthetic derivatives have become widely used in prescription and over-the-counter medications. In 1993, over 40 million prescriptions in the U.S. contained these alkaloids.
Ephedra and its relatives are considered to act pharmacologically as sympathomimetic compounds. This means that they stimulate the sympathetic part of our central nervous system, responsible for the release of adrenaline, which leads to the fight or flight response. Ephedra also affects the cardiovascular system by increasing the blood pressure, and causes a relaxation and dilation of the bronchial smooth muscles in asthmatics. Ephedra can shrink the swelling of the delicate mucous membranes which line the respiratory system, thus drying up watery discharges, unstuffing clogged nasal and sinus passages which accompany colds, sinus conditions, and allergies.
In both animal and human studies, Ma Huang has been shown to accelerate weight loss. It has been shown not only to suppress appetite, but to increase the metabolic activity of the adipose or fat tissue. Therefore, ephedra's weight-reducing effects are most significant in individuals who have a low metabolic rate or a sluggish thyroid gland.
Ma Huang is a powerful herb which, when abused, can cause some unwanted side effects. Ephedra should not be taken by those with high blood pressure, nervousness or anxiety, insomnia, cardiac conditions, or pregnancy. Studies indicate that when used in conjunction with other Chinese herbs in a traditional formula, Ma Huang does not have any of these effects and has remarkable beneficial effects on human health.
We recommend consulting a healthcare practitioner knowledgeable in the use of botanical medicine before using Ma Huang so you can be further educated about its totality of effects. And before using herbal preparations with Ma Huang, check to see if you are sensitive to its effects by starting with the minimal dose and working up to a therapeutic dose. Logically, since ephedra is a stimulant itself, it should be used prudently with other stimulants, beverages, or drugs with stimulant effects. Again, consult with your natural healthcare practitioner.
So, listeners, remember Ma Huang, the traditional Chinese ephedra, and make sure to include it in your natural medicine chest.
And that brings us back to the program, and you're listening, of course, to the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. I'm Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Zamperone, and I'm here with Dr. Christine Horner talking about summer ailments, of course, focusing on Lyme disease and mosquito-borne issues. And so we're going to transition to mosquitoes, although I just wanted to ask you some questions about, like, when during the break I went online onto Natural Standards website and I put in doxycycline and I found that it depleted about 20 nutrients, including killing off a lot of probiotics, but it depleted folic acid, B12, most of the B vitamins, many, many different things. A lot of times I'll put in many prescription drugs into the drug nutrient depletion websites to see when people are taking these things, what do they have to do them? In other words, can they take the antibiotics intelligently? So what's your take on that, Dr. Horner?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely have to, you know, be careful. I mean, antibiotics have their place, but they're known to have lots and lots of, you know, deleterious effects on our bodies, too. So, you know, for sure, that's an excellent approach, is to see specifically what each antibiotic or whatever medication that you're being prescribed and what kind of effects it can have on your body so you can be able to counteract that. They actually have found that doing some of the nutrients. You talked about like the B complex vitamins, and B6 in particular is something that's been shown to be very important for people that have Lyme disease, because it helps kind of with metabolic and cellular functions and helps people to kind of fight the infections, and also is important for the neurological functions. Magnesium, you know, is another just really critical mineral that we should probably be taking every day, you know, too. And so that's really important for, you know, if you have any kind of like neurological or muscle types of aches and pains and so forth with in relationship to Lyme, that's a good thing to take. And then CoQ10, which is a vitamin-like substance that our body manufactures, and it's used in energy metabolism. And we find that it usually goes low in people that have any kind of, you know, chronic disease. And so by supplementing with CoQ10, you can oftentimes improve, you know, a lot of symptoms, from congestive heart failure is one of the things that we first, you know, discovered with it, but also something that's very protective for the brain and the nervous system, and, you know, helps with inflammation. So those are kind of good things to take anyway, but they can be particularly beneficial for Lyme. And then, like you mentioned, those antibiotics can sometimes knock those nutrients out. So it's really smart, you know, to look that up and make sure that you're supplementing so that you avoid some of the side effects.
I've also seen people, you know, after taking the militaristic way of treating Lyme disease, because, you know, you can do the militaristic way where... And, you know, holistic practitioners are just as guilty of that, too. They just substitute herbs and other intravenous things and whatnot for antibiotics, instead of, like, your approach is to look at the person, look at the person's health, and try to boost the individual's health so they can fight it off yourself. Back to my example, I've kind of got sidetracked, but, you know, when I got bit, I developed a rash, which was lucky for me because I knew I got bit, although I did not find a tick, which was interesting in the first time. And then I developed something that was kind of like a combination of the flu and the mumps all together.
Yeah.
And, you know, I developed a high fever. And I know that Dr. Cooley back in the days, you know, found that when cancer patients had malaria, this is how we develop Cooley's toxins. Many of them were cured of cancer, or they cured themselves of cancer, because the fever marshaled their immune system so strongly that you know, it really helped their immune system. So my immune system seemed to be working well. We call that the vital force in naturopathic medicine. But, you know, but a lot of people, because they're lacking in nutrients, or you mentioned sugar and things like that, the gut flora being off, stress, nutrient dysfunction, even malabsorption is one thing that I've spent a lot of time looking at people's nutrient levels. And if I find that they have malabsorption, then I know their immune system is going to be hard-pressed to mount a good defense against the Lyme disease. And they're the walking wounded who come into my office. I'm sure you share the similar path.
Right. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And, you know, in my training, too, for what, you know, as you had said at the beginning of the show, you know, I was a surgeon, and I was doing a lot of breast reconstructive surgery. And this is, you know, 20 years ago. I'm watching my patients get younger and younger and younger. And finally, I started doing breast reconstruction for breast cancer on women in their 20s. And I was like, okay, something's way wrong here. So I started going through the medical research to, you know, just find what, if anything, is an influential factor that, you know, women could do to potentially lower the risk of it. And of course, even back then, 20 years ago, I found thousands of studies showing that pretty much all diet and lifestyle, I mean, like 95% of the cases could be prevented through just diet and lifestyle choices alone. And then that turns out that that's basically the situation for every, you know, type of chronic disease, you know, practically. And so, you know, when I went through my medical school training, I didn't have a single course in nutrition. I realized I really didn't learn anything about health. I learned about diseases and what you could do with medications to kind of mask the symptoms and,
right.
and you know, with surgery. But really, I didn't have any understanding about how do you create health in the human body. And so then I got introduced to Ayurveda, the traditional system of medicine from India. And, you know, the whole focus of Ayurveda is how to create health. So they have an unbelievable sophisticated, you know, understanding and realizing that we have, there's like the rule book, you know, that you have to follow. and there's certain rules we have to follow as far as kind of the physics and physiology and all that kind of stuff. And so it's kind of like, how does the human body work? And what are the things that you need to do to keep it in balance? And of course, we're not all the same. So it's a little trickier when, you know, because we're not all the same, that there's certain things that like hot, spicy foods that for one person can be just incredibly wonderful. And for another person, they instantly get, you know, indigestion, you know, with it. So it all has to do with your body constitution. And they recognize about 9 different body constitutions. And there are some things that are all similar for us. But then there's some more refined, you know, variations. And so the whole point of everything that's recommended in Ayurveda, actually, this is where yoga originated, you know, herbs, sound therapies, and almost everything you've heard of in natural health was from Ayurveda 5,000 years ago. But so what the whole point of all these different techniques that you do, including meditation, which I, you know, practice transcendental meditation every day, but it's creating balance in your body. And when you do that, then it enhances your own body's and your healing intelligence. And that's what keeps you well. So you can really refine it. I mean, like I said, I had no understanding of this, you know, because I wasn't taught anything like this when I went through Western medical training. But after experiencing Ayurveda, it was just like, oh my God. I mean, it's amazing how simple some of these techniques are, very profound effects from them. And then the level of health and wellness, energy and joy that you can have in your life is amazing. And most people have no awareness of that because certainly their doctors, you know, trained in this country don't know.
Yeah. Another thing we use at the Naturopathic College in Bridgeport, where I'm one of the founders, is we use a lot of hyperthermia treatments where we purposefully raise people's body temperature up to a very feverish level. Now, remember me, I had a fever for a few days, and so my body's intelligence, you know, saw the illness and recognized it and developed a fever. Many people, they get bit and they don't get a fever, and that's a problem because that's usually the way our immune system works. When some foreign antigens are in our bloodstream, we get the, you know, the famous rubor, calor, dolor, et cetera, et cetera. So I like your approach that, and I think it maybe is appropriate for maybe cancer too. I know that there's a lot of centers in the country. If you Google hyperthermia and cancer adjunctive therapy, this is done in like major universities all over the country.
Yeah.
And that's an ancient Ayurvedic concept. It's an ancient Ayurvedic concept.
Yes.
Because they were the first
ones
to jump in the sauna. They would put you in the sauna and you'd sweat out toxins. It sounds kind of primitive, but there's a lot of actually science behind that. Would you agree?
Oh, there's a huge amount of science on it. And so I have an infrared sauna at my house that I use almost every single day. And, you know, they found that not only is it great for detoxifying, but for cardiovascular effects. And then it actually causes a significant improvement in the immune system and helps to kill off cancer cells. So like you said, there are centers like UCLA, you know, in Los Angeles is one of them where they're working with hyperthermia. You know, here in the States, where it's like, it's always amazing to me when you start actually adopting these things, because, you know, in the holistic cancer centers, like there's a lot of different clinics in Tijuana, Germany, and so forth. It's whole body hyperthermia is one of the modalities that they, you know, use in their approach. And, you know, we just don't do those kinds of things here. But like I said, fortunately, we're catching on.
Yeah.
Even in Western medicine, there are centers. Yeah.
If you go to Google, it's funny because I went on Google Image and I looked up ways to induce hyperthermia in patients. And there are centers all over the United States doing this in regular hospitals as an adjunct to chemo and radiation. But anyway, I figured because you're an expert and a surgeon and involved in breast cancer and things like that, we would talk about that. But let's get back to mosquitoes, because that was kind of our charge today, is to talk about these things, although, you know, anything involving the immune system is important. So now mosquitoes have been shown to pass lots of diseases. I mean, we go back to antiquity, the old malaria, where the ancient people thought it had to do with the bad air, mal air, and it was actually the mosquitoes that... And then, of course, the Native Americans teaching our colonists about jopiweed or eupatorium or boneset, because they would get breakbone fever from being bitten by mosquitoes. The Chinese call it summer heat, because it's very unusual to have a flu in the summer. So they found it kind of odd, and also looked at it as a type of dampness kind of oriented thing. They were kind of all circling around the concept that many of these diseases are mosquito-borne vector diseases. So mosquitoes are something we got to watch out in the summer, too, I would think.
Oh, yeah. Another thing that, there's all sorts of different diseases that they carry. The Zika virus, is another, one, most recent one that we were, concerned about and so forth. And there's even some thought that maybe, although it hasn't been demonstrated yet, that mosquitoes might even carry Lyme disease, because a lot of people don't find a tick, they don't get the rash, and so there's a thought that maybe the mosquitoes might be another vector for that too. So yeah, for sure. And some of the things that you do, for Lyme disease are the same things, that you do with the mosquitoes to repel them. The essential oils, that we talked about, are things that are extremely effective at keeping the mosquitoes away. And catnip oil, we mentioned too, and I, found a study where it showed that it was 10 times more effective than DEET, was. And then they did a test using the military, because, they're outdoors in the high grasses and that kind of thing. So they have special kind of protective clothing that they wear. And so they did a study where they sprayed them with DEET, and then they used all sorts of other like essential oils, and then they measured how many ticks they had on them, to see what the effectiveness was. And again, they found that the essential oils were more effective than the DEET, which I think is wonderful.
I like lemon eucalyptus. That's one of my favorite ones that seems to work very well. And we have lots of mosquitoes. I live in 10 acres, and so at night, you better spray yourself, because you're going to be feasted upon. And they do a good job. I mean, you do smell, so people, it's sort of like... So there's another extract. I think it's called picaridin or something like that, that came from originally like black pepper, and that's become a DEET alternative too. So there are some of the commercial companies are making some other alternatives to, if you don't like the smell of the essential oils. A lot of people don't like the smell like citronella or whatever, but some people...
Yeah, I don't like citronella, but other ones, like catnip oil, actually smells darn good. I play tennis, and I'd have it in my tennis bag, and so I'm spraying all my tennis bags and stuff. But,
wow.
So there's
a
years ago, I have a fun
catnip oil just commercially
story.
Somewhere now?
Oh yeah,
or you just buy the oil yourself and make your own.
No, I got the spray. Well, you can do either, but I got the spray from a health food store actually in Taos, New Mexico, where I used to live, and so I first discovered it there. Yeah, but so here's kind of a fun story with this. So years and years ago, 15 years ago or something, I was hiking in Lake Tahoe, and so my hiking buddy and I were like, you know, coming up to the crest of the mountain. And then we see, you know, this lake, you know, not Lake Tahoe, but another little kind of pond, little pond thing that was just below us a little bit. And there's like this dark cloud that was over it. And I was like, God, what is that? You know, there's like a dark cloud over it. So we hiked down there. It was all mosquitoes. So we had essential oils, you know, we didn't have DEET on. We just had the essential oil stuff on, and neither one of us got bitten by a mosquito.
Wow.
It was just like, wow, this is a testimony about the effectiveness.
Yeah, we did well, too. You know, Long Island, particularly on the South Shore, lots of mosquitoes at night, and we were over at somewhere around Fire Island once across from Santa Mariches, if people know Long Island. And yeah, same type of thing at night, just hordes of mosquitoes. Those that, you know, sprayed were a lot better off than those that didn't. Now, there's also, some people tend to get bit more, and I don't know why.
Yeah.
Maybe they're wearing perfume. Maybe it's the smell of their skin. Maybe it's some unknown substance exuding from the skin. Like, I've heard that B vitamins actually keep the mosquitoes at bay. Have you heard anything like that?
Well, yeah, I mean, for sure. So there's an interesting phenomenon in my family. So my grandfather, Charlie McDougall from Scotland, so, you know, mosquitoes would land on him and they would just take off. Well, the wonderful thing is that all of us, the descendants, have the same thing. So they don't like me. If they have a preference, you know, if somebody else is around, I'll get them. One time when I was a little girl, I was out hiking with my my Girl Scout troop, and little girls started screaming and stuff, and I was like, "What? Why are they screaming? You know, what's going on?" So they were just getting eaten alive by mosquitoes, and not a single one would bite me. So that, my brother's that way, my sister, yeah. So it's kind of a fun thing. They don't like me, but so I think that it has something to do with odor, because they find that, for instance, ticks and mosquitoes, one of the reasons the essential oils work is because they don't like the smell of them. So I think it has something to do just with kind of whatever your, you know, DNA is. It gives you a particular, you know, odor. They don't like me. So that's, yeah.
Yeah. I heard when, you know, so when people are sort of like fair game for mosquitoes, if they start taking B vitamins or taking brewer's yeast, which I guess is has lots of B vitamins and has that yeasty kind of smell to it, you know, pungent type of smell, that keeps them away. And you know, I don't know, I just go by, you know, Eagle Scouts. You know, I have Eagle Scouts in my family. My brother is a Eagle Scout, and he's spent so much time in the woods. And so I go by what hunters, I know many of my patients are hunters, and they tell me kind of what works and what doesn't work. So you kind of trust these folks because they spend a lot of time outdoors, you know.
Right.
So any last things? We're running out of time. We only have about 3 more minutes, 4 minutes for the show.
Anything
you want to talk about? I know you wrote a book a while back. What was the name of your book there?
Yes, I've written a couple books. So my first book was called Waking the Warrior Goddess, kind of an odd title, but it's all about enlivening your body's inner healing intelligence to help to prevent breast cancer. So the focus is, you know, on all those things. And then my most recent book that is called Radiant Health, Ageless Beauty. And it's a guide to how to create extraordinary health and longevity. So it focuses on health, not on disease, but everything that's important in order to experience extraordinary health and longevity. And both of my books actually won National Book Awards for the best book in health, medicine, and nutrition for the year that they came out. So they're super readable, and I have it really based in science. So there's, you know, lots and lots and lots of references, and then I have it framed work in Ayurveda, because I think it just is something that helps to understand how everything works, you know, according to their philosophies.
Yeah. And if folks want to check out your website or, you know, get in touch with you, how would they do so?
Sure. So my website is drchristinehorner.com. That's drchristinehorner.com. And on my website, I have a free newsletter, and I actually have my own radio show called The Radiant Health Show with Dr. Christine Horner.
Oh, wow.
So there's archives. Yeah. And I do lots and lots of television, too. So there's all sorts of videos, you know, on there, and, you know, tips and tricks on how to be as healthy as you possibly can. And, you know, the great thing is that the human body is so responsive. I mean, I think it's almost laughable about how responsive it is. So as soon as you start doing anything, you know, that is healthy, your body can have just a massive improvement. So it's really amazing how simple it can be to improve your health and be able to experience extraordinary health. And with me, you know, it's just like, gosh, when you've got more energy, you feel more joy, you know, and who wouldn't want that?
And it's good that holistic practitioners like us, we tend to not only measure disease with the kind of the conventional lab test, but we actually help patients measure their health, like benchmarks. Like, look, like I'll run tests to see how much DNA damage you have, how much mercury's in your body, what's your B vitamins, antioxidant status. Because these are all, I think, markers of health versus just disease. How well does your liver detoxify substances? So unfortunately, we're out of time, but these are the types of things that holistic practitioners try to measure health versus just disease. Any last comments on that before we finish the program?
Oh, yeah. I mean, ideally, we're just kind of in an upside-down paradigm, I think, in our country. It's like, you know, we work with people after they've already gotten a disease. It's like, you know, actually the thing that makes much more sense is to work with somebody before they get the disease, and that you're, you know, really focusing on ways that they can improve their health and never get, you know, a horrible disease. So, yeah, I totally agree with you.
Right. It's both complex and simple. Well, thanks, Dr. Horner, for being our guest today. It was a great show. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Bye-bye. And that does it for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. If you'd like more information about what we do, I am at drznaturally.com, and Dr. Kamai is at naturalnurse.com. Take care and have a healthy day. Bye-bye, folks.